and gentlemen, honorable members. I think there's tea outside for those who have just arrived. You know, ekhaya siyada. We must be emsebenzini ukuthi mase sikhuluma, we must be able. Yabona ukuthi bene energy. So those who haven't had something to bite can do so, and then we can start. Asked by the public, we know how to respond. So some of the submissions that I saw, I'm not quite sure whether I'm right. They are still the same as what was in the NA. Maybe they are slightly different, but we will follow that up. So the purpose of the bill is to actually address, as we all know, and identify gaps that are in the Act, present Act, Broadcasting Act. So, without any waste of time, I will welcome Save Our SABC campaign. We will start with you.
Thank you.
Maybe you will introduce yourself and your team.
I will definitely do that. My name is Kate Skinner, and I am the coordinator of the SABC campaign. And there are a number of us that are here from the campaign. In terms of our presentation as the campaign, there will be three of us giving the presentation. So it's myself, Kate Skinner. It will also be Prakashni Govender from PASATU and Augustine Limpet-Law. And then afterwards, we have a number of our coalition partners who are also here. William Boyle from the Media Monitoring Project, Melissa Moore from the Freedom of Expression Institute, and Faiza Smith from MISA South Africa. So we're very happy to have three of our partners here as well. And obviously, CASATU is a very important partner and is giving part of the main presentation with Justine and myself. So should we move straight on to our presentation? The Save Our SABC campaign was launched in June 2008, and its purpose was to find short, medium, and long-term solutions to the various SABC crises. And we are a large organization. We consist of a number of trade unions, CASATU, BAMARU, a number of NGOs, CBOs, training institutions such as the Institute for Advancement of Journalism, producers, the Independent Producers Organization is a member of the coalition, academics, and freedom of expression activists. In terms of our position on this bill, we welcome the Broadcasting Amendment Bill, and we see it as a significant improvement on the Draft Broadcasting Act Amendment Bill. We certainly see a lot of changes, and we're very happy with those changes. So we would want to congratulate the Portfolio Committee on doing good work on that. However, ideally, we think it's not a good idea to do piecemeal amendments to the Broadcasting Act. So these ad hoc amendments to the Broadcasting Act, we don't actually think ultimately are ideal. Because to solve the SABC crisis, we believe that what you need to do is to assess the root causes of the problem, and then further to that, what we really believe is needed is a green paper, white paper process, a really thorough consultative process that will ultimately lead to the promulgation of a new SABC Act to really deal with the crisis. We believe that is what is needed. If key changes are made to this amendment bill, as we suggested, we will certainly support this bill as a short-term measure. The Broadcasting Amendment Bill focuses primarily on removal of board members. To begin to solve the immediate crisis at the SABC, we believe it needs to deal with a few things. I'm going to talk about those few things up front and then just go into a little bit more detail about it. And then Justine and Pat will go into the actual clauses so that all the members of the select committee are completely completely aware of which clauses we think need to be changed and how. So the issues that we think are important that we still need to pay attention to are as follows. First of all, appointments to the board, including appointment of executive members to the board. Appointments to the executive committee, that's the management, the senior management within the SCBC. We also think critically quorum issues need to be dealt with, and we'll certainly talk about that in more detail just now. And then criteria for the appointment to the interim board, we're noting a gap that still exists around that. And the removal of non-executive members by Parliament and of executive members by the non-executive members. So just, I'm sure you're aware of this, but on the board there are both executive and non-executive members. So executive members are your group chief executive officer, your chief operating officer, your chief financial officer, three of them, and then there's the 12 non-executive members that are not the full-time management people, the ones that are appointed by Parliament. Okay. Right, so just to talk about appointments, we believe, and I think this would be generally held view, that the crisis at the SCBC started with problems around appointments, and so we really think that these issues need to be dealt with. So to restore the credibility of future SCBC boards, there needs to be greater transparency and public participation in the appointment process. And what we've done is we've said that there needs to be three specific things that need to be done in order to increase the transparency and the public participation. And we basically said that we need short lists of candidates to be published with the names of nominees, so importantly the names of nominees, and public interviews for all short lists of candidates. And then we thought that it would really be incredibly useful if MPs could give a written evaluation, including reasons for the selection of candidates to a short list. We only think that that would help in terms of the credibility of new boards. Okay, another very important point in terms of appointments, we believe to begin to resolve the ongoing tensions between the non-executive and the executive members of the board, that there are problems around appointments of the executive committees. Ongoing tensions between the non-executive and executive members of the board and gaps around the appointment of SBC executive committee members, we need two things. An amendment that deals with the appointment of executive members to the board, because there's a gap. A gap in the Prison Broadcasting Act around that. It doesn't actually say how the executive members should be appointed. And at the moment, we need a member that deals with the appointment of the executive committee, a further gap, and that's the senior management, and that's a further gap. All right, on to quorum issues. The present clause is unworkable for the interim board. The quorum for a normal board meeting is 9 people. That's in the Broadcasting Act. But we picked up, obviously, that the interim board includes only 8 members. So without an amendment to the quorum clause, the interim board will not be able to sit. It literally won't be able to sit. So certainly, as one of those technical issues that really does need to be dealt with, the quorum issues would be one of those. And also, we believe that it's very important that there are criteria for appointments to the interim board, given the extraordinary nature of the interim board. And we have also got some clauses around what those criteria should be. Okay, I'm going to hand over now to Prakashini.
Thank you and good morning. Thank you especially to the Select Committee for inviting us to participate. As Kate has indicated, we have had some amendments which we've supported, but there is a need for further technical amendments. I'll be speaking specifically to the question of the amendments to clauses or section 15. To some extent, they relate to, may appear to be largely technical, but we would urge the committee to give attention to them because they could actually undermine the overall objectives of what we're trying to achieve in this process. Specifically, in relation to the current clause 15.1, which basically incorporates the existing Section 15 of the Broadcasting Act. Our concern relates there to the power of the board to remove, to make recommendations in relation to the removal of members of the board. This would actually concern could play into dynamics in relation to the board, could actually play into the question of political or undue interference in that respect. We also consider that it actually doesn't resolve itself with the appointment process. The appointment process goes through Parliament, through the mechanism of the appointing mechanism that's currently reflected in terms of amendments, which is the speaker in consultation, well, the president in consultation with the speaker. So essentially, there isn't the linkage between the appointment process and the removal process has been broken down. And while we may be speaking about individual members of a board, when appointment process is made, essentially each individual is considered on the basis of how they contribute to the composition as a whole. So which means then that the removal of individual members must also speak to how it reflects on the composition as a whole. So it's actually quite important in terms of how the process inputs in terms of the overall functioning of the board composition. So we think that while it's a minor amendment that we're seeking here, minor technical amendment, it actually goes to the core as to what the objectives of this bill would be trying to address. And so accordingly on that basis, we would call for the deletion of the of clause 15.1, subclause 1, and then which they would mean that the main mechanism of removing individual board members as well as the overall composition or overall the whole collective of non-executive board members would be done through Parliament, through the appointing mechanism as amended or as proposed to be amended in terms of the current bill's provisions. Then moving on to our other concern, and this relates to the question where the previous presenter spoke about the need to make a distinction between executive and non-executive members. Our view is that, and this relates to the operational functions which could be undermined, is that currently there's silence in the legislation which provides a gap, and it suggests that executive members should be treated in the same way as non-executive members. And in terms of current practice, generally in terms of corporate governance, we would propose that the executive members be appointed as well as be removed by the board itself. So basically, the non-executive members get appointed through the normal functioning mechanisms through Parliament, and the executive members get appointed and removed through the board itself. And it would address a situation where you could have where you dissolve the entire board, and until an interim board is set up, you'd have an unworkable situation. So we have amendments which are proposed on page 10 of the submission to that effect. We'd also argue in terms of the removal of the entire board, and this relates to clauses 15 capital A sub 1 sub B and 15A sub 2 sub paragraph C, that there needs to be a reference to a due process which would involve the committee of the National Assembly inquiring into the removal of the board and making recommendations and the National Assembly adopting a resolution. So this would actually address questions of constitutionality as well. Further, we, as taking forth the recommendations that we are making in terms of the distinction that needs to be made between non-executive and executive members, you'd also have consequential amendments that would have to be made. So you'd remove the references in relevant sections to the board being dissolved and basically referring to the collective removal of non-executive members of the board as well. And this would actually address the current problems that we have in terms of the gaps that we've identified. And then broadly, we would also propose amendments under the current clause 15A, sub 3, paragraph A. And these would, again, give effect to clarifying the distinction between the executive and non-executive appointments, and then further would actually clarify and reflect that there has to be qualification criteria for non-executive members in terms of interim board appointments, and this you'd simply do by making a reference to the existing section 13.4. This is notwithstanding our long-term calls for some amendments to address the current wording of 13.4 to address our concerns around composition of the board. And also finally as well, in relation to that clause, you would recommend that there should be minimum time frames imposed in terms of the decision-making process because you'd want an interim board to be set up as soon as possible to ensure that the functioning of the SABC wouldn't be compromised in the interim. And just the final point that I would make in terms of our input, and Kusatu would like to really stress this, we understood the urgency and the need for the amendments, and this is based on the crisis that we that is currently facing us, and that we had to embark on a process which actually would effect focused amendments. But we have long-term concerns, and which we have seen has actually translated into the current crisis, and we believe that this needs to be addressed in terms of an overall policy and legislative review process, which we would call on the committee, part of Parliament, to recommend or require the department to embark on within a minimum time frame. And specifically, what we would be looking at is the questions of qualification and disqualification criteria for members of the board, as well as more specifically the composition and how it reflects in terms of its mandate as a public broadcaster, and particularly in terms of the constitutional role that the SABC, we believe, would play, not just in the questions of freedom of expression, but also the extent to which it gives effect essentially to the implementation of other rights, whether it's information on public services or education or healthcare, also in terms of giving effect to rights in terms of rights to cultural and religious rights, as well as to providing support services for people and addressing issues of equality. For example, we've got special services for people with disabilities. So that would be the final point, and I'll hand over to Mr. Benson. Thank you.
Thank you. My name is Justine Limpslaw, and I'm going to be taking you through the specific amendments that we are proposing coming out of the board statement by Kate and Prakashni. I think it might be useful if you have it in front of you. We did written submissions, and in those are detailed the specific word-for-word suggested amendments that we have, and I'll be referring to the page numbers and the paragraph numbers so that it'll be easy for you to cross-reference. It's a document looks like this. It's about 13 pages long, and it says written representations by the Civil Society Coalition Save Our SABC, Reclaiming Our Public Broadcaster. Okay, there seems to be a problem. They don't have it. The written submission.
I've got another different.
Okay, let's see.
William?
But in the meantime, can you carry on?
If I can just say what we've tried to do in these written submissions to make it helpful for the committee is that we have addressed a particular issue under the heading. At the beginning stated what we think is problematic about the current aspects of the bill, or the fact that it doesn't address a major lacuna or gap in the Broadcasting Act, And then we've actually suggested the proposed wording changes, which we hope will make it easier for the committee if they did want to make the changes as suggested. So the first issue is, and this is on page 8, page 8 and 9 of the presentation. Sorry, my computer moved. It's on page 7 and 8 of the written presentation, is to deal with amendments to Section 13. Section 13 of the Broadcasting Act deals with appointments to the board. And as Kate and Prakashini said, I think there's widespread agreement even within Parliament, certainly that was our experience before the Portfolio Committee, that the appointments process broke down somewhat in respect of the last board. And to try and stop that happening and to improve the appointments provisions to allow for greater transparency, we've made proposed amendments to 13.2, 7, 8, and then a new proposed 13.8A. And what we are suggesting is that shortlisted candidates, their CVs, and the names of those nominating them be published, and those can be made available, for example, on the parliamentary site, for example, that we set out that there needs to be a public interview process of the shortlisted candidates, even though we know that generally that does happen as a matter of course. We still think it's important that it actually be entrenched in the Broadcasting Act. And as Kate said, the written evaluation of shortlisted candidates. And you can find our suggestions about that on page 7. We're also suggesting that there must be a clarification about the executive and non-executive members and who appoints them. And we think this is a critical intervention that needs to be made by the NCOP. All of the current litigation between the board and senior management rests on who is entitled to suspend or fire or whatever the wording is, the executive members. And there are differences of opinion between the minister, the board, and the chief executive officer at the moment. Unless that issue is clarified by Parliament, these fights are just going to go on. And I think it is difficult. This is a real gap in the legislation that has to be addressed. And we think this isn't an issue that can be left for a green paper, white paper process. It's got to be addressed now. Otherwise, this bill that's currently before you is not going to have the desired effect, which is an immediate, let's try and deal with the immediate crisis issue. This is absolutely critical to the immediate crisis issue and has got to be sorted out throughout the appointment and removal provisions. And you see that we deal with those on page 8. And there are tiny amendments. They're just inserting the appropriate word, whether it's non-executive or executive, in the correct place, and making it clear in line with corporate governance principles, and we note in line with the minister's own interpretation of the Broadcasting Act, which is that the board itself makes the appointments. Certainly, that's her affidavit before the High Court in the ongoing SABC litigation. We have also proposed amendments on the quorum provisions, and as Kate said earlier, if this issue is not addressed, the interim board appointed will be, even if it meets and everyone's there, will be unable to take any decisions because the Broadcasting Act says the quorum is 9, and the interim board is proposed to be 8. So this issue's got to be addressed. We suggest it's addressed by making the necessary changes that specify that the quorum for ordinary board meetings, in other words, the full board, is 9, and that a quorum for interim board meetings is 6. And then, as is usually the case, for either, whether it's interim or ordinary board meetings, either the chairperson or the deputy chairperson must be present. And we've got the suggested wording for that clause set out at the top of page nine. And we understand, I think just to state this, we really do understand that the National Assembly in particular is very anxious for this bill to go through as quickly as possible. We recognize that and we support this bill going through. But we think it's imperative on the NCOP to make sure that it gets passed in a form that's actually workable and won't lead to even more paralysis at the SABC. So that's what we're trying to do, is help the NCOP make the technical amendments that need to be done immediately. If you look then, we have on page 9, we have also made amendments to section 14 of the Broadcasting Act to deal with the appointment of the Executive Committee. Now, the Executive Committee is a particular senior management committee that is critical to the running of the SABC, and it's an ongoing lacuna in the Broadcasting Act about who in fact appoints the Executive Committee. And we've made suggestions in line with internationally recognized corporate governance principles that in fact the Executive Committee ought to be appointed by the CEO, but after consultation with the board. That isn't a large amendment, it's the addition of a particular clause in section 14.1, and we've set that out on page 9. Right. The next big issue, and I'll go through this fairly quickly because Prakashini dealt with this in quite a bit of detail in her part of the presentation, but obviously this is a critical issue, the removal of the board. I mean, this is, or the removal provisions relating to the board. And the first point, as Prakashini said, the removal of non-executive members by other members of the board is not appropriate. And we strongly urge that Parliament must be involved in the removal of non-executive members of the board. And therefore, we propose to delete Section 15.1A of the bill in its entirety, so that Clause 15.1B, and that needs proper cross-referencing to the due process requirements, etc., becomes Section 15.1. These are all set out on page 10 of our written submission about how that needs to be done. And as part of that, the Broadcasting Act is completely silent on the removal of executive board members. That should read, not that second bullet point should read, silent on the removal of executive board members. And again, this is at the absolute root of the current ongoing litigation. I think there've now been 4 or 5 high court cases precisely involving this issue about who has the power to suspend, remove, etc., the executive members. And unless this is dealt with and a clear distinction is made between executive and non-executive board members, the very heart of this bill currently before you, which is to remove executive members and to create an interim board in the interim, will not be able to work, because this bill envisages that the executive board members will stay in place, but it doesn't say that. It talks about the removal of the whole board without specifying the appropriate distinction between executive and non-executive. And therefore, what we suggested is that Clause 15.3 of the Broadcasting Act be amended to specify that executive members of the board can be removed by the rest of the non-executive members, and obviously there are many more of them, there are 12 of them than 3, but again, it's got to be set out on appropriate grounds for removal. It's to avoid the implications that certainly currently exist about those removal processes being personal vendettas that are not linked to justifiable, rational, objective grounds for removal, such as misconduct, etc. and the bill set out those grounds very well, we think, and that's why we haven't, you know, where we agree with the bill, we're not saying, yes, well done, we agree, we're just highlighting the areas, the critical areas that we think need to be changed. We have also made other suggestions. Where the bill deals with the removal of the entire board, and obviously this would be in extraordinary circumstances, we think it's critical that there must be a reference. We understand that this was in the minds of the legislators. Certainly there was no disagreement with that at the portfolio committee, but we have to make mention of due process. And there has to be an actual resolution. It makes reference to a resolution, but we think that it needs to specifically refer to due process and an actual inquiry by a committee, rather than just having Parliament pass a resolution without there being due process and a thorough, proper inquiry. In any event, the Administrative Justice, I mean, the principles of the Administrative Justice Act would not allow that to happen. So it's just better to avoid any future litigation to make it clear in the wording. So you can see on page 11, we have suggested at the top fairly simple wording about due process and an inquiry by the committee. And we also suggest, and this is, sorry if I sound like a stuck record on this, it's critical that those provisions dealing with the removal of the whole board specify that actually what is being talked about is the removal of the non-executive members of the board. Otherwise, the provisions around the interim board become unworkable because they envisage having the executive members there. So it's only the non-executive members that we're talking about when we talk about the removal of the whole board, and we've made that change. We have also proposed fairly significant amendments to Section 15 capital A. Now, 15 capital A is to be introduced by this bill, and that deals with the interim board provisions. Again, as I've said, we have to clarify the distinction between executive or non-executive members, or else this provision is unworkable. It's critical also that there's got to be a reference back for the non-executive interim board appointments. I mean, this is an extraordinary process where the president appoints, you know, after recommendations by the National Assembly, but there's no public participation process or anything like that envisaged for the interim board. That's only going to be appropriate, I think, in exceptional circumstances. But in order to maintain public confidence in the SABC when it is under an interim board, which has far less parliamentary oversight in the appointments process, at least the qualification criteria must remain the same. So we are suggesting, and we've done that there be a cross-reference to the normal appointment criteria to guide Parliament in making the recommendations as to who ought to be appointed to the board by the appointing body. Thirdly, we have picked up that there is a gap, we're sure it's entirely unintentional, of the provisions around how quickly these appointments need to be made, and the gap is about how long the National Assembly recommendations, how long the National Assembly has in order to come up with the recommendations. We suggest that this should be 30 days to avoid a drawn-out situation where there is no board, so that the SABC, which is a massive organisation that has to have direction, is unable to operate. And we make that suggestion as part of the clause 15A3 on pages 11 and 12. You can see that 15A33. We talk about the 30 days.
And those really are the crux of our issues. We have, as Kate said, we've consulted widely about this. We've kept our comments to be as short and to the point as possible in an attempt to address only those problems that we think really will render the actual operation of the bill unworkable if it gets passed in its current form. So we wish the NCOP well in its deliberations.
Thank you very much. We will now go to the next. We will come to questions for clarification after everybody has presented. And afterwards, we will sit down as the committee without you, look at how reasonable your suggestions are. But in the meantime, now can I welcome Media Monitoring Project? And thank you very much for your presentation. Introduce yourself, sir. Maybe with your team, or are you alone?
I'm alone.
Oh.
Nothing wrong in the world, but
no, but you are protected.
Good morning. Okay, let's see if we can get this thing cooking. Oh, excellent.
You all have copies? Okay.
Yes, my apology. You don't have copies of the actual presentation. I only finished it sometime early this morning. I have a very ill 13-month-old boy. But anyway. So good morning, Chairperson, honourable members, ladies and gentlemen, friends and colleagues. Thank you very much for allowing us this opportunity to present. At this committee, we realize you've really bent over backwards to accommodate us, and we really are very grateful for that. In terms of what MMP's presentation is about, I think on a small scale it's about the crises at SABC, and I say crises because there's more than one. If you speak to anyone who works at the SABC, they will relate to you at least five or six. Speak to anyone on the board, read the newspapers, watch television, and you will see even more. So there really are a number of crises. It's also about a piece of legislation and our constitution. On the big scale, I think, and this is important for us to bear in mind, I believe, is that it's about supporting institutions that are central to our democracy. And the public broadcaster and parliament are, of course, central to our democracy. I'm going to bang on about this because I come to this with a very clear human rights bias, which is why I'm going to just tell you a little bit about MMP. Our vision is a responsible media that enables an informed and engaged citizenry in Africa and across the world. In terms of what we do, we're a human rights-based non-governmental organization. We've been monitoring the media since 1993, so this year is 15 years of monitoring. In that time, we've done well over 100 different media monitoring projects. We focus on all sorts of human rights issues, gender, HIV, currently doing a lot on racism, xenophobia, children, elections, monitoring projects, etc., etc. We also do a number of policy submissions to the IBA, then later to ICASA and to Parliament, of which today is one of them. In terms of our framework, my assumptions and bias, I said I come to this from a clear human rights framework, in that we take as our Bible at the office our constitution. And that's something that the principles contained in that are things that we like to try and make real for journalists and the other people that we work with. We're a founding member of the Save Our SABC Reclaiming Our Public Broadcaster Coalition, and that in terms of this, our submission should be read in conjunction with the coalition submission, and we firmly support the ideals and suggestions that they've made, with one or two small alterations. In terms of the other things about this that I'm coming to this presentation is I think that we need to accept the core role of the SABC to our public. It's not just there as a broadcaster to give people news and for them to then argue that it's biased or that it isn't biased. It fulfills quite an unusual and very special and very significant role in the lives of most of the people in South Africa. For most people, their greatest form of access is through radio, as I'm sure you're aware, and that often their sole access to information is on the basis of what they get access to and through from the SABC. And in doing that, it really does help them fulfill a fundamental right to receive information. So when we talk about it, I mean, it's something that we're very passionate about at the Coalition and at the MMPs, is that it's absolutely fundamental to our country and our democracy. In the same way, I believe, that Parliament is. Now, the concepts that we're dealing with here are issues that are, again, core to democracy. We're talking about credibility, trust, integrity, process, and democracy, due process being fundamental to democracy. In all democracies, the thing that's common to them is that there's always due process. Things just, decisions aren't just made arbitrarily. Things don't just happen in a way where no one's accountable or answerable for. There's always a process. And as a young democracy, I think we're still getting on top of all of these various process issues. We have too many hangovers from our previous hideous government. In terms of the current context, I think we need to accept that there's significant damage has been done to the integrity and credibility of the SABC. It's an embarrassment, and I think it's shameful that our public broadcaster is going through the crises that it is going through at the moment. And there's accountability has to be laid at the doors of, well, at almost all of the doors of anyone who has anything to do with the SABC. When we're talking about credibility, though, it's not just the SABC that's at stake, it's also Parliament. Parliament has also taken, I believe, in this process, a significant knock in credibility during this process, around the appointment process of the board, around the fact that the board was appointed and then that they decided to try and withdraw the board, and then things got very complicated and there were moves and countermoves. As ordinary members of civil society, it sends all sorts of very peculiar and very disturbing messages around process, around credibility, around integrity, and these things are very, very damaging to our democracy. If we look at this issue of trust, I think earlier this year we referred to this in our submission. The SABC were going around happily spouting the fact that they are considered the second most trusted or the greatest and second and most people expressed the second most confidence in the SABC. You can see that in 2003, I'm referring to the little yellow blocks, they were 75, 73 and 71. So the slight decrease, but then going up again in 2006. So either way, a very high level of public confidence. Now I'm sure that if we were to repeat the study now, they wouldn't get anywhere near this. But what's critical for me about this is that you start to look at towards the bottom of the graph and you see Parliament. And what strikes me about Parliament is that the trend there is that trust, public confidence in Parliament is decreasing. Again, this is a very fundamentally worrying, deeply disturbing trend for a democracy as young as ours. We're only 15 years, and the life of any country, that's a blink of an eye. For us to be losing, for public confidence to be that low and on a downward trend, I think alarm bells need to be ringing. It's things that we have to be doing to regain credibility and trust. Political parties, you'll see, are right at second from the bottom. The only saving grace for this, I guess, is that when I've looked at similar studies that haven't, to the best of my knowledge, been done in South Africa, but certainly in other parts of the world, they indicate that media are pretty much often very much located together with politicians, journalists specifically. Which again, I think on some level it's quite amusing, but again, it says that the people that we're relying on to either bring us information about our country and what's happening in our country aren't public people, don't have confidence in them, and critically the people that are legislating, the ones, you in this room, people are losing confidence in you. And again, that I think is a deeply disturbing trend for a young democracy. Now the thing is, you say, well, why should we care? Because you're here, you know that you're doing your job, and I guess there's this debate between perception versus reality. The critical thing is that it may just, on some level, be the creation of over-dramatic and sensational headlines by various print media about the SABC. But the fact is, the perception is there, and once you've got that perception, it does the damage. It does the harm. And the reason that's deeply disturbing is that then people stop believing. They stop caring and critically for us as in a democracy. They stop engaging with democracy. And again, we're only 15 years old. To stop engaging with a democracy now, we've got problems. in terms of MMP submission, we focused on two key areas. The first is encouraging open and transparent practice in the nomination, selection, and appointment of new non-executive board members, and in the criteria for members of an interim board. So looking at democratic process in action, this again follows very much what the coalition has said, and this is a direct quote from one of the areas relating to the request for detailed CVs, that interviews for people on the shortlist are open to the public. But where we differ slightly with the coalition's point of view is that we say a written evaluation of each shortlisted nominee is published by the relevant committee. So rather than an overall evaluation of people, MMP strongly suggests that there should be an individual evaluation or motivation written up about each shortlisted candidate. Now the thing is when we looked at the informal notes and the deliberations around this that the committee had, we saw that there was quite a lot of support for this particular and for these particular suggestions, even though they're absent from the bill that's currently before you. And some of the arguments that were presented were that they were resource intensive. We're aware that Parliament already has a greater workload. They also argued that the process was already open to the public, so then why do you need these nominations? And then there was also some concern expressed about the term evaluation. And our response to this, to the, those criteria is this, is that many of these practices should already take place. It's normal practice in appointing people that you will do some kind of evaluation. You'll write some kind of a process up about that person. I think it's also critical to remember that we're talking about the board of one of the most fundamental public institutions of our country. These aren't Mickey Mouse positions. These are people that have the weight of our nation on their shoulders in terms of information. So they're very, very significant. And because of that, I think that affords them should afford them greater stature in the process. In terms of it being open, we know that access is limited. You've got excellent services like Parliamentary Monitoring Group, for example, that make many of these minutes and meetings accessible to public. But we know that for all of those efforts, and indeed the efforts of Parliament to kind of reach out, that we still, there's always a good idea to encourage greater access. So what is necessary would be an assessment or evaluation of why a person was shortlisted. And in terms of this, the benefits and credibility value of doing this, of fulfilling, of adding these criteria, strongly outweighs any potential additional resources that it may require. Doing this, it sends all the right kinds of messages to people about the credibility of the board, the importance, the due process, the restoring their integrity and credibility to the SABC and indeed to Parliament. On the interim board, as with our coalition partners, we welcome the level of clarity achieved on the duration as well as the numbers. And we strongly support everything that they said and reiterate the importance of drawing this distinction between executive and non-executive members as well as including criteria. I think it's embarrassing that the GCO had to stand up in court and say, no, actually the minister appoints me. To see these things happening to our public institutions, it really is demeaning to our democracy. So on the interim board, we've also suggested criteria, and here we differ slightly with, again, our coalition. In fact, we don't differ really. This is our first proposal, is that we came up with the following criteria for an interim board, bearing in mind that an interim board is an exceptional board. It's coming at a time that necessarily says, folks, things at the SABC are not stable. We've got an emergency plan. We've got an interim board to start to take care of things. That being the case, we need to make sure that we can do everything in our power to reassure members of the public, those that work at the SABC, folks, don't worry, we've got this in hand, and this is what we're going to do, and these are the people, and this is the basis on which we're going to do these things. They've seen that if you look at when companies have crises, the companies that go through those crises and navigate them the best are always the ones that communicate whatever they're doing. It's one of those things that if you speak to any communications expert, they'll tell you exactly that. In a time of tribal and crisis, communicate, communicate, communicate. In relationship advice, I'm sure many of you will have need for relationship advice, they'll tell you exactly the same thing. Communicate, communicate, communicate. So it's simple. We need basic criteria that communicates all the right messages to ordinary members of the public, to the people of South Africa. So we've specified a five-person board and the non-executive members and the criteria on which they're there. Given the lack of public process that would be involved in the parliamentary appointment of the interim board, we think that it's absolutely fundamental that there can be no doubt in anyone's mind that says IEC, but Parliament, they're just being evil, they're pursuing an ANC agenda, or they're pursuing this agenda, or a Zuma agenda, or blah, blah, blah. Let's be clear, let's do this, let's say it. These are the bases on which they've been appointed. If you've got questions, you can check the CVs, you can check the process. It opens all of those doors to everyone. Now, the concern about those criteria was that there was a view that these criteria were self-serving. And my response to that is, well, yes, they are self-serving, because the position of the coalition is founded on principles of democracy, human rights, and we all openly advocate for a credible public broadcaster. So, yes, we believe that those criteria clearly serve our interest of promoting a credible public broadcaster. I think the problem with the current selection criteria, and this is the reason we differ with the coalition on this, on the extent of mentioning these criteria, is that they're open to vague interpretation. In fact, those were the criteria that were used in the appointment of the current board, and in fact of the previous one, where we saw the idea that certain people were appointed saying that they had labor experience, which in fact in some cases amounted to working with people on a daily basis. I mean, I'm being extreme in that example, but the fact is those criteria are open to vague interpretation. We don't need vagueness here. We've got a massive series of crises. We need clarity. We need clear, credible communication. The other key reason this is so fundamentally important is that the interim board, if it comes into being, is likely to be there over an election period. So now we've got a case of a broadcaster that's currently destabilized over the very foundations of a democracy, the election period. The role the SABC plays during an election period is even greater than it is on any normal day. So it is absolutely fundamental, critical, that board is there, that it's seen and it has perceived to have as much credibility, and the processes in which they're appointed and that they on which they're there are clear and as open and as transparent as can possibly be done. There can be no harm in being clear and transparent about these things. We stand to lose nothing by doing that. The only areas we stand to lose is if we start to fudge things a little. So in our quest for clarity and transparency, I found this lovely quote. It's from a playwright called Tom Stoppard, and in this is a photographer. And he says, people do terrible things to each other, but it's worse in places where everybody is kept in the dark. And no, I'm not talking in this instance about the actual SABC building, although any of you have been there will know that it is a place that's almost designed to keep you in the dark. Its very architectural structure is something that really, really is alienating and quite extraordinarily bizarre. It's one of those apartheid crimes that someone was never found guilty of. But anyway, the key thing about this is that this speaks very much and very clearly to this issue of people can get away with bad things when others are kept in the dark. So in terms of considering the risk, let's take the scenario that says, no, this bill's fine, let's leave these things. What we know is going to happen is that there are going to be more legal challenges. We've already seen how the GCO has managed to extend the particular challenge with the board over several months. Where's the public interest in this? I think people forget that they're working for the public, actually. This is I think that in that particular instance, they've forgotten who they're really there to serve. And I think it's very sad. I think if these changes aren't made, public perceptions will be very strongly supported of Parliament putting party agendas before the people. We've seen this, that perception is there, it is clear, it is undeniable. If these changes aren't made, those are going to be the things that are going to be reported on, those are going to be the things that people are going to pull on and attack and take apart. And we'd have no need to do that. There's no need for that to happen. I think the other key thing about this is that if these changes aren't made, it really will undermine Parliament's initiative. As we've said before, the thing that is really that has been so positive and constructive about this is that Parliament was the only group to say, hold on, folks, there's a massive crisis here. Can we do something about this, please? ICASA, they're still asleep. We heard read in the Business Day they get invited to attend functions that don't even bother to appear. So I'm not sure at what point they're going to wake up to the SOBC being in crisis. Now that may sound harsh, but crises call for measures to action to take place. Now Parliament has come to the party. They've said, folks, let's deal with this. Let's get out. Let's find some kind of solution. And they've invited members of the public to participate. If these changes aren't made, it's going to fundamentally undermine that particular initiative. And also, critically, I think it's not going to help in restoring the credibility of the SABC, and it certainly won't reinforce the credibility of Parliament. So in conclusion, I think that this really presents a real opportunity, because these issues that we're dealing with here go beyond party politics, they go beyond political grandstanding, point scoring, and upset even beyond Polokwane, if that's possible. They go to the very heart of our democracy. So finally, I think I use that quote, people do terrible things to each other, but it's worse in places where everyone is kept in the dark. I think the opposite of this is also true, and this is where Parliament can do something incredible. People do good things to each other, but they're even better in places where everybody is kept in the light. So I'd request to please seize the opportunity and make the changes. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Can I now invite Freedom of Expression Institute?
Thank you, Madam Chairperson, and good morning to the rest of the committee. I would first and foremost like to thank the NCOP for inviting us here today to give you our submission and to address these critical issues with you. And just by way of introduction, the SXI was founded in 1994 to foster the rights of freedom of expression and access to information and to oppose censorship. The freedom of expression's primary objective is to advance the right to freedom of expression and to oppose any form of censorship. So it is along these lines that we have actually submitted this submission to you, and we would like to raise issues that are of utmost importance to us. We are a member of the coalition that has given their presentation this morning, and we fully endorse the submission that has been made by the coalition. The purpose of our separate submission is to enhance some of the issues that have been raised, and as I said, to raise some issues that we feel very strongly about. We would also like to commend the National Assembly on making a bill that is a vast improvement on the draft bill that served before them in August this year. But we do, however, have a number of issues with the bill which we would like to address. And if I may, I'd like to address them in two separate categories, the first category being principal issues, matters of principle, and secondly, technical issues. In respect of principal objectives, our principal objective, that is of the SXI, is the creation of an independent public broadcaster that provides fair and unbiased information to the public as a whole. A proper analysis of this bill requires that this objective be attained. This is in line with Section 192 of the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa, and I'd like to actually quote it because this actually forms the core of what we are discussing here today. It reads as follows. National legislation must establish an independent authority to regulate broadcasting in the public interest. Now, I specifically want to highlight the last little bit that I'm going to read now. Broadcasting in the public interest and to ensure fairness and a diversity of views broadly representing South African society. Now, following from this section in the Constitution, we then move to the Broadcasting Act. specifically to section 10.1d, which provides as follows. The public service provided by the corporation, which is the SABC, must d, provide significant news and public affairs programming which meets the highest standards of journalism, as well as fair and unbiased coverage, impartiality, balance and independence from government, commercial and other interests. Now, we acknowledge Parliament's concern in respect of the ongoing crises at the public broadcast, and we applaud the attempts to try and find a solution. We do share the Coalition's view that the crisis is deep-rooted, and it's going to take more than just an amendment bill to solve the crises. In this regard, we fully support the Coalition's attempt to put in motion a total review process, an independent review process, as well as a transparent review process, so that all our concerns can be aired and solutions can be found. Now, what is the crisis? We have been discussing, or you've heard in the media and here today, that there's a crisis at the SABC. Now, what is that crisis? In our view, the crisis at the public broadcaster has manifested itself as a build-up of unaccountable behavior on many levels. And this unaccountability has not been checked by the institutions charged with oversight of the broadcaster, i.e. ICASA. Since the appointment of the 2003 board, there have been more examples emerging of editorial timidity, even self-censorship in the broadcaster, a trend that the board has been unable to stem. There is evidence of the blurring of the lines between government and management functions inside the public broadcaster, as well as the management and editorial functions, leading to high levels of internal conflict. At times, the public broadcaster has displayed news values more in keeping with a state broadcaster than a public broadcaster. The current board lacks the legitimacy to deal decisively with all these instances of unaccountable behavior, as it is widely perceived as being unrepresentative and tainted by political manipulation. Part of our principle-based approach to this submission is the constitutional principles that are actually at stake here. What does it mean to say that our constitution has to be upheld? Well, if we go to Section 16 of the Constitution, that guarantees everyone the right of freedom of expression. This includes freedom of the press and other media, and the freedom to receive and impart information. Now, closely linked to this right is Section 32, which guarantees every person the right of access to information guaranteed, as I said, by Section 32, which provides that everyone has access to any information held by the state and any information that is held by another person that is required for the exercise or protection of any rights. Now, the Constitutional Court has also articulated the importance of the right to freedom of expression as contained in Section 16. And if I may, I would like to actually quote a quote from the case of Kamala and others versus Holomisa, which encapsulates the message that we are actually trying to portray today. The print, broadcast, and electronic media have a particular role in the protection of freedom of expression in our society. Every citizen has a right to freedom of the press and the media, and the right to receive information and ideas. The media are key agents in ensuring that these aspects of the rights to freedom of expression are respected. The ability of each citizen to be a responsible and effective member of our society depends upon the manner in which the media carry out our constitutional mandate. The media thus rely on freedom of expression and must foster it. In this sense, they are both bearers of the rights and bearers of constitutional obligations in relation to freedom of expression. In a democratic society, then, the mass media play a role of undeniable importance. They bear an obligation to provide citizens with both information and with a platform for the exchange of ideas, which is crucial to the development of a democratic culture. This primary agents of the dissemination of information and ideas, they are inevitably extremely powerful institutions in a democracy, and they have a constitutional duty to act with vigor, courage, integrity, and responsibility. So I think that encapsulates, the object that we have to attain by means of this bill, and as I said, the further review process and a new Broadcasting Act. I have made reference to a couple of other cases with similar quotes, which I will not go through for the sake of brevity, but you are referred to them from page 11 onwards. If I may now move to the technical considerations, and I think the Coalition has dealt with all the technical issues very well, and we fully support them and think that they should be brought into the bill that is to be passed, subject to the elucidations that I would like to make on specifically two issues, the first being the role of the appointing body and the second being removal from office provisions. We believe that the role of the appointing body and appointment and removal of members of the board as a whole should, due to the nature and the mandate that I've just discussed of the public broadcaster, be a non-discretionary role, and that it is obliged to act on the instructions of Parliament. It is essential in order to attain proper credibility of the public broadcaster and to bolster its independence. And closely linked to that, as my colleague sitting to my left here said, and it is also the credibility of Parliament that is at stake. If the process was conducted along these lines, there would be a far greater public acceptance of the appointments and a considerable improvement in the level of confidence in the public broadcaster's impartiality. This would also contribute to a reduction in conflict between executive and non-executive members, which in turn would result in the board being able to function more effectively. And I will deal a little bit later with the problem that has already been discussed, the non-executive versus the executive and appointment of the respective of parties. I also believe that a problem that we have, it's more of a practical problem, is the interpretation of the word recommend as it is used in the bill. How it should be interpreted is to afford no or non-discretionary role to the appointing body. In respect of the removal from office provisions, we fully support the Coalition's amendments, that is to remove section, I think it's 15.1a. What section 15 basically does is it provides for two circumstances in which a board member can be removed. The first being upon the instance of the recommendation of the board, in which event the appointing body may remove such a member. So you've got the appointing body being the Speaker and the President, may, which insinuates a discretion, on the recommendation of the board. Okay. So this section is highly problematic for two reasons. In the first instance, the appointing body may, on the recommendation of the board, remove a member on account of misconduct or inability to perform its duties. In our view, this provision is unacceptable, as this decision is ultimately left in the discretion of the appointing body and will reduce the independence of the public broadcaster. All appointments and removals must be upon the adoption of a resolution by the National Assembly calling for such removal after due process and due inquiry. As the section stands, it supports the view that the legislation is seeking to give the appointing body a discretionary function, which we find inappropriate. So in essence, with regard to the actual removal of board members' provisions, firstly, the amendment suggested by a Coalition in respect of that subsection A, it must be deleted in totality, and then it must relate only to non-executive members of the board, especially in the instance where the board, or should I say the extraordinary instance where the board is removed as a whole, it should only be the non-executive, because as it reads at the moment, the executives are also removed along with the non-executives. Now, No problem. And then my last concern that I would like to deal with now, it's a sub-issue, but I still think it is very important, and that's with regard to the Articles of Association of the SABC. Now, why I say it is important is because it's in further motivation of the non-executive directors should appoint the executive directors. Okay.
Can you repeat that?
Okay. The reason why I want to deal with Articles of Association is because it motivates, or the issues that I'm going to raise in respect of the Articles of Association at the moment, motivate the argument that the non-executive members should appoint the executive members of the board. Okay, but maybe once I've gone through it, it will make more sense. In terms of the Broadcasting Act, the public broadcaster enjoys editorial independence, as I referred to previously. And specifically with regard to Section 1311, which states that the board shall control the affairs of the corporation. Now, this is central to my problems with the Articles of Association. The Articles of Association give too much power to the executive, being the Minister of Communications, to control aspects of the board's affairs, which strips the board of its ability to act independently on crucial issues. We have approached counsel on this issue, and pursuing, you know, a court application for declarator, stating that or providing that the Articles of Association are unlawful and even unconstitutional, and our advice is that we will most definitely succeed. Now, examples of the way in which the board's independence is violated by the Articles of Association can be summarized as follows. In terms of the articles, the board must submit its corporate plans for approval to the minister, and the SABC must consider any comments of the, on the business plans. Now, the lodging of business plans falls under what Section 1311 would state as the affairs of the corporation. Now, this may invite censorship and even threaten independence. One of the crucial problems, which I believe is the end of these Articles of Association, which has to be fixed, is that the board is required to comply with any statutes or any resolution passed by a general meeting. Now, given the fact that the minister is the sole shareholder on behalf of the state and has total control over the general meeting, the board could be made to comply with resolutions that are deeply compromising of the independence of the SABC and could invite political manipulation. Another issue is the fact that the non-executive directors must recommend to the minister the appointment of the executive directors. So in other words, the minister is given a power of veto over the appointment of the executive directors. So that is why I think it's important that we actually fix this issue. One of these appointments is the GCO, who is actually in control of the public broadcaster. So if the minister has control over who is actually appointed as the GCO, I fear that, you know, this could lead to censorship and would compromise the independence of the SABC. So in conclusion, with regard to the SABC Articles of Association, they must be amended to provide that the non-executives appoint the executives, and also to bring it in line with the Broadcasting Act. Attached to my submission, I have given you a memorandum which sets out the legal stance, our legal stance on this, which you can go through at your leisure. and I trust it will be of assistance to you. And just the way forward, I think that the coalition has summarized that very well, what needs to be done, and we fully support that, and we will endeavor to do all that is possible to attain a objective and independent public broadcaster.
Thank you very much. That was a Freedom of Expression Institute. Can I now invite Media Institute of Southern Africa?
Thank you for this opportunity. I'd like to thank the NCLP for giving us this opportunity to present. It's a very short brief that I'm putting forward. The Media Institute of South Africa, is part of the SADC region, and we are one of 11 of the chapters within the SADC region. And I think what the NCLP needs to carefully consider with all the presentations that have been done, also with the coalition position papers that have been submitted, is that the region that actually looks up to South Africa. And for a long time, they've looked at the SABC as a public broadcaster and actually looked at how they will transform real estate broadcasters into a public broadcaster. And now that we're going through all these complications and challenges that we're having, a lot of questions are being posed at us and asking, what should we do? So once more, they are looking at the coalition for direction to assist and guide them to ensure that they don't fall into the same pitfall that we find ourselves in now. MISA South Africa, we are a member of the Civil Society Coalition and the Save Our SABC campaign, and we fully support the position tabled within the coalition paper. And we'd like to reemphasize on two areas. The transparency during the recruitment nomination process. MISA South Africa chapter is concerned that the Draft Broadcasting Amendment Bill is not clear on the appointment of executive board members. It only talks about the appointment of the non-executive members. We also believe that the non-executive members of the board should appoint executive members. The appointment process of non-executive members of the board must be open, transparent process that ensures public participation. This is in line with national and international corporate governance best practice. We strongly believe that the King II corporate governance practice should be a guide on how to deal with this matter. We do not agree with the current role of the minister as provided for in the Articles of Association in this process, as we fear that the minister's involvement is politically influenced, which will subject the process to political manipulation. Removal of board members individually and collectively. MISA South Africa chapter supports the position that Parliament be engaged should a situation arise that a board member or members need to be removed from the board. We do not agree with the removal process happening within the board itself without engaging Parliament. Should this internal removal process be allowed to happen without consultation with Parliament, we believe that it's giving too much power to the board. The board should not be removed in its entirety, but the bill must make it clear that dissolving the board is actually referring to the non-executive members of the board. It is crucial that the executive members of the board stay in place to form part of the interim board. MISA South Africa also believes that it is important for the SABC to fulfill its role as a public broadcaster without political interference in its operations, especially with a run-up to the coming elections. We welcome the interim amendment that has enabled us to participate in this process and ensure the independence of our public broadcaster. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Though you said more than what is on the paper. So can we have the whole presentation,
okay,
so that at our own time when we look at everything, then we are able to follow what you are saying.
I will give you a copy of this.
I think we have come to the end of our presentations. I'll open this time now to members for questions of clarity. Maybe before I do that, I would, from myself, I would like to know whether all of you have met, so that you share these ideas. For example, if I listen to the gentleman on other, most of the things, I think you differ equally. I'll give you a chance. So because I think in order for us to be able to understand what's going on, we should actually understand, you know, how you all, whether you all got together, because you know, one thing that I like with democracy is parliament is open to everybody. And we, as freedom of expression, we've allowed you to say what you are saying. But I think it will be also proper if maybe you all meet and, you know, come to a consensus. Members, Honorable Koloni.
Thanks, Chairperson. I think your first statement, when you allowed the presenters to come forward, you made a point that after all the presentations, the committee will be given a chance to check what to do. I think I must first really appreciate and say openly that I find a high degree of a level of communality. See, they converge so much in their presentation. To me, it's not even a question of asking whether they have met to appear. They do consult, except here and there. But when the first presenter, the coalition, took us, as they introduced, they cautioned the committee that there's no need. They cautioned the committee that they feel the piecemeal change we may not help. There must be an intensive engagement through a green paper. I thought when they made that statement, they were not going to submit all the substantive amendments that they have recommended, but they are reasonable. In fact, I must say so. They sound reasonable. It is clear indeed when we listen that you desire a really media freedom and credibility based on reasonable transparency. That you cannot deny. But the presenter who did not provide us with the slides, I think we must get those slides. I think we must get those slides. Because in his presentation, he went on agreeing a lot with the coalition, and somewhere indeed he made a point to this committee that there are consequences of not taking these changes into account, and he outlined all those consequences, you know, and the risk involved. So we need these slides. Another point that I really forgot to mention here. There has been a mention here on the presentation where they make some recommendation, but the submission, whatever it is, it must be done and processed through the parliament, not through the National Assembly. I think that one is only, to me, is only captured correctly by the MISA when it talks about parliament, not about National Assembly. Otherwise, if we say these recommendations or appointments or removals should only be processed through the National Assembly, it means it defeats the exercise we are here now for, because it means the NCOP is cut off. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Colonel. One presenter said all concerns can be shared and a solution can be found. So can you respond to...
Sure. Yeah, I think it is a very important question to ask. I mean, how does the coalition operate? We are obviously a very large grouping of a whole lot of different organizations with different mandates, different reasons for being in existence, different programs, etc. So the way that we operate is that we try to find consensus amongst our various members. What we presented, professionally, Justine and myself, was what we've all agreed to as the coalition. But what happened then with MISA South Africa, with the Freedom of Expression Institute and the Media Monitoring Project, was that they were then also putting forward some other issues that they wanted to. So some of those other issues would be taking some of the points that we had made further. Some of those would be actually disagreeing with us. What we try to do as a coalition is to find where there is consensus amongst this large grouping of organizations. And in fact, what has been amazing in this process is that there is a lot of consensus. And I think that there is an incredible amount of goodwill within civil society around really wanting to try and find some solutions around to this SABC crisis. And so that is basically our way. But certainly we would never want to stop any of our coalition members from putting forward their own particular views on things. In fact, we encourage all the different members of the coalition to feel completely free to say, this we agree with, this we completely disagree with. And as long as there are reasons for that, there is no problem, because in fact one of the major roles of the coalition is to actually allow the airing of all these different ideas publicly. So all of us get a much deeper understanding of what needs to be done about these various crises.
Yeah.
I just wanted to respond to the point made by the Honourable Member sitting across from me. The first is that the distinction between, or what seems to be an apparent contradiction between the coalition saying this needs a much longer process and then our support for the bill, which is obviously an immediate process. And the answer is that we believe in both. We think that there are a number of problems with the Broadcasting Act that have been there since its inception, in the way that the SABC is governed and operates. The charter, for example, is very vague about what, in fact, the public broadcaster's actual mandate is. And there are a number of issues around that we would like to see improved. But we recognize that those are medium, in some cases long-term solutions that would be fixed by having an SABC Act. To all intents and purposes, after the Electronic Communications Act, the Broadcasting Act is an SABC Act, but it's not sufficiently focused, we don't think, and there's still a lot of problems with it. And that's why we're calling for the green paper, white paper process. But we recognize, I think as William particularly said, and support the fact that Parliament has been the only public institution willing to do something about the extraordinary immediate crisis that we find ourselves in with the SABC. And as a coalition, we want to support that. And we recognize this bill as being a significant measure to try and deal with the immediate current pressing crises. So So we do want to do both. We want to support this bill to make it the best possible bill we can be, it can be, and we want to see a long-term process for a proper legislative framework and SABC Act that governs the public broadcaster. And also on the question of Parliament, we were using language that comes from existing provisions in the Broadcasting Act that talk a lot about the National Assembly as opposed to Parliament. But we would absolutely, I think, as a coalition, welcome the broadening of that to include the NCOP, and if the NCOP would like us, you know, I mean, they have legal advisors that can change that wording to refer to Parliament as opposed to the National Assembly, we would imagine. And absolutely, we would support the NCOP being involved in all of those processes, particularly around the recommendations and the appointments procedures and removal procedures of the ordinary board and the appointments of an interim board. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other more questions for clarity? I think we've had you. Like I said in the beginning, that we're going to sit down as the committee and look at your submissions. We can't respond now. We've asked questions for clarity. I would really like to thank you all for coming. And let me say, members of the committee can remain, and you are all invited to lunch if you can just hang around and leave us to talk our, you know, home affairs. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Bonita niña. Bonita niña.